most complaints, when I hear complaints, when I see tweeted complaints about trade liberalization and how awful trade is, these are coming on devices that are manufactured in Japan, Singapore, Korea, snapped together in China, enabled by the free flow of global capital. So Americans are a bit hypocritical in their complaints about trade.
Daniel Eikenson is a trade analyst at the Cato Institute here in DC, and he's got a brand new paper that analyzes the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and it's got all the answers, and I'm glad to have you here in the studio. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tell us about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. Give us your just overall assessment. What do you think of the TPP?
Well, it's a very comprehensive trade agreement between the United States and 11 other countries. Together, they constitute about 40% of global GDP and about a third of global trade. It's really the only game in town as far as trade liberalization goes at the moment. The negotiations began in 2009. It remains to be seen whether the next president will be supportive of the TPP. Both major party candidates are opposed. Gary Johnson is in favor of it, so that's what lies ahead.
So you've taken a broad look at the entire agreement. You've looked at it chapter by chapter and sort of graded each chapter and each part of it.
Yeah.
What's your overall assessment? Yeah. Do you like it? Do you dislike it? Is it a mixed bag? What's your feeling?
Yeah, well, it's a mixed bag. I think our conclusion is that it is... it's got some baked-in protectionism. There's a lot of liberalization. On par, it's net liberalizing. It will expand our economic freedoms. And my colleagues and I, my co-authors and I, support it. And we think that Congress should ratify the agreement.
Well, let's talk about maybe some of the concerns first and some of the reasons some people think it might not be worth ratifying,
sure.
Like the intellectual property provisions. There's been some concern that it does tilt towards large corporations, for example, the pharmaceutical industry. Is that true? Are those legitimate concerns?
There is reason to debate intellectual property and whether it should be protected. I happen to think it should be protected, and my colleagues do too. The question is, how much? We graded the intellectual property chapter. We gave it a grade of a 4. So it's kind of protectionist because we think there is too much protection, particularly in the copyright area. Under U.S. law, it's life of the author plus 50 years. In our trade agreements, it's life of the author plus 70 years. So intellectual property protection is, by definition, protectionism. In the patent area, with respect to pharmaceuticals, there's not much in the TPP that pushes beyond what is currently legal in the United States. So no U.S. laws will need to change to accommodate the patent provisions of the TPP. But I think the talk about overreaching IP protections is more extravagant than the reality. We really took a close look at it, and we don't see anything in there that's going to tie anybody's hands. Internet service providers also are not really on the hook to do anything that they're not doing right now. We gave it a protectionist grade because it does go a little too far, but it's not as bad as some of the rhetoric would have us believe.
And so in what way does the good outweigh the bad, in your view?
Most tariffs around the world, among these 12 countries, are going to go to zero over the course of 10 years. So there's going to be huge markets for U.S. agricultural exports. They're going to be U.S. consumers are going to have access to products from Japan and Vietnam and the other TPP countries that they did not have before. And you know, that's really the essence of these trade agreements, to get rid of those border barriers. One of the reasons that the trade agreements have expanded to include what I call sort of global governance is the nature of trade has changed. It used to be the case that products were produced all in one country and then exported to another country. And the only thing that really concerned exporters and importers were border barriers, tariffs, customs procedures, corruption. Nowadays, because of the increase in cross-border investment, transnational supply chains, international companies are competing in domestic space, and protectionism lurks in domestic regulations, in procurement decisions, in various rules that are murky. So trade agreements now are trying to go after these rules to harmonize them or to make them more transparent. And I think you run the risk of coming up with a global solution when local solutions might be better. However, it's legitimate. It's a legitimate ground for considering the expansion of trade agreements, but yet we have to traipse carefully.
Can you address the seeming tide that has turned against trade, certainly in this presidential candidacy? We have both the left and the right. You have both Trump and you have Sanders really coming out very strongly against trade and influencing Hillary as well,
right.
Who used to call the TPP the gold standard.
Yes.
Now she seems to be moving against it, it seems like. Address some of those concerns. Does an agreement like TPP make it easier for large corporations to ship manufacturing jobs out of the country?
I don't think it makes it easier for them to do that. They can do that right now. In fact, investment is very fluid going in and out of the United States. One thing that's overlooked in the discussion is there's more foreign investment in U.S. manufacturing than in any other country's manufacturing sector by a huge amount. There's about $1.1 trillion of foreign investment in U.S. companies, meaning, you know, Honda here in the United States, Michelin here in the United States. The second largest destination is China with about $500 billion. So despite all this talk of manufacturing decline and atrophy, foreigners have certainly not lost faith or interest in producing in the United States. The rhetoric that we have heard about trade and manufacturing in the U.S. this presidential election is not really that different from previous presidential elections ever since the NAFTA debate in 1992.
If you're paying $12, $13, $14 an hour for factory workers, and you can move your factory south of the border, pay a dollar an hour for your labor, have no health care, that's the most expensive single element making a car, have no environmental controls, no pollution controls, and no retirement, and you don't care about anything but making money, there will be a giant sucking sound going south.
So trade has been topical, particularly during the primaries. Republicans appeal to the right with sort of nationalistic messages. It's Team USA against Team China, and exports are our points, imports are their points, and the trade account is the scoreboard. And we have a deficit, which means we're losing at trade, and we're losing because the foreign team is cheating. That's Trump's message. Bernie Sanders' message is trade only benefits rich corporations and wealthy people, when in fact, the exact opposite is true. It's the big corporations can endure the costs of tariffs, the costs of impediments, regulatory impediments. Smaller companies that are challengers to the domestic incumbents and need to export to achieve economies of scale, they have a harder time absorbing the costs of protectionism. So same with consumers. Wealthier Americans don't consume a lot of foreign products, believe it or not. Americans, richer Americans, consume a lot of services. It's poorer Americans who consume more products, and most of those products do come from abroad. We have very low tariffs overall, about 2%, but we have tariff peaks on life's necessities like clothing and footwear. So if I'm Bernie Sanders and I'm a progressive, I should be advocating for elimination of those tariffs, but I haven't. For some reason, I'm being more responsive to the special interests, the labor unions, the environmentalists who oppose trade for other reasons. But anyway, it's been, this year it's persisted. The anti-trade rhetoric in the campaign trail has persisted beyond the conventions into the general election. I happen to think that Hillary Clinton will pivot again if she becomes the president. I think certainly she will support the TPP as she did before. She will recognize its importance as an economic and geostrategic tool. And so she just needs to be more assertive about the benefits of trade. She took an anti-trade stance in 2008 along with Obama, and they were going to reopen NAFTA, and Obama abandoned that when he became president. She'll abandon this rhetoric as well.
So it is a puzzle to me, though, why trade has become an issue, and not just among certain pressure groups, but it's quite popular to be against trade just among people. But if what you say is true, and I think that it is, that every time we go shopping, we go to Walmart or anywhere, and we see the benefits and get the benefits of trade, why is it unpopular? Why have people turned against it if they're feeling the benefits of it every single day?
Trade has become a catch-all for inequality, income inequality, wealth inequality, inequality of opportunity. Trade liberalization has sort of been embraced by the inside the Beltway elites, and it's the Bastille, and Americans want to storm the Bastille. They want to storm the ivory tower where we have trade analysts pointing out the benefits of trade liberalization. Most complaints, when I hear complaints, when I see tweeted complaints about trade liberalization and how awful trade is, these are coming on devices that are manufactured in Japan, Singapore, Korea, snapped together in China, enabled by the free flow of global capital. So the Americans are a bit hypocritical in their complaints about trade.
Daniel Eikenson is a trade analyst at the Cato Institute. He's got a brand new paper that analyzes the Trans-Pacific Partnership in detail, and it's really worth checking out. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks.
I'm Todd Cranin for Reason TV.